You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I am your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so glad that you're joining me for this episode. Thanks as always to the Broadway Podcast Network, and thank you for listening. Please rate, comment, subscribe, do all that good stuff, tell your friends, your family, post on social media if you love this episode. But what's extra special about this episode is that we're doing a ticket giveaway. Yes, a ticket giveaway to a Broadway show. I'll get to that in a second. I just wanted to say, you know, the world is hard right now. I feel like there is, you know, so much to fix and help. And, you know, throughout the 66, 67 episodes of Dear Multi-Hyphenate, I've shared my opinions on how art can help and how multi-hyphenate artistry is about understanding who we are and what we're fighting for. That when we take up this space, it's about fighting for something. And I feel like more than ever, it's so important. With the rise of school shootings and assault rifle usage and our rights being threatened and being taken away and control over people with uteruses' bodies. Like, it's just, it's a lot to handle. But if you have an opinion and you have a point of view and you are charged to make art, do it. And I hope you are able to take the lessons that you're learning from this podcast and are able to create something. That's my only wish with this podcast, is that you can hear a perspective from other people in the industry and are able to take something and run with it. And that's something that I'm very excited about with this episode, because Moises Kaufman really kind of takes us from the ground up in regards to like creating a new theater company or a new show and raising funds and things like that. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. All right, ticket giveaway. Paradise Square is on Broadway at the Barrymore Theater, and it is incredible. I loved it so much. I got to see a rehearsal of it, and then I saw it once it opened, and I loved it so much. And I want you to see it. And Moises Kaufman, who is today's guest, is the director of Paradise Square on Broadway. So we're going to do a ticket giveaway. The rules are very simple. All you have to do is follow at Dear Multi-Hyphenate on Instagram and go on Apple Podcasts, and you're going to write a review. As long as you write a review from June 1st to June 13th, and you mention how much you loved Moises Kaufman's episode and you loved Dear Multi-Hyphenate, I'll put you in a little drawing, and you're going to get tickets. And it's going to be so exciting because you're going to see the show, and it's so wonderful. Okay, moving on to the episode. Moises Kaufman is the founder and artistic director of Tectonic Theater Project, a Tony and Emmy-nominated director and playwright, and a 2015 recipient of the National Medal of Arts. Mr. Kaufman's Broadway directing credits include the revival of Harvey Fierstein's Torch Song, the revival of The Heiress with Jessica Chastain, 33 Variations, which he also wrote, starring Jane Fonda, 5 Tony nominations, Rahiv Joseph's Pulitzer Prize finalist Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo with Robin Williams, and Doug Wright's Pulitzer and Tony Award-winning play I Am My Own Wife with Jefferson Mays. His play, The Laramie Project, which he wrote with the Tectonic Theater Project Company, is among the most performed plays in America. Kaufman also co-wrote and directed the HBO film adaptation of The Laramie Project, which received 2 Emmy Award nominations for Best Director and Best Writer. He is an Obie Award winner and a Guggenheim Fellow in playwriting. I sincerely hope you enjoy this episode, and please write a review. You might get to see Paradise Square on Broadway. Moises Kaufman, how are you?
Hi, Michael. I'm well. How are you?
So you're Venezuelan, you're Jewish, and you're gay. That is two of the three things I can relate to. I'll let you guess which ones. But also you're a New Yorker, which is, I think I can also relate to you with. But you are also, you have done work in Miami. Did you live in Miami for a bit?
No, I never lived in Miami. I live in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and I often say that this is the one place where my three identities blend in perfectly, right? Because there's a strong Hispanic community, there's a strong Jewish community, there's a strong gay community. So it's the only place in the world where I feel like I'm at home.
That's amazing.
The Miami connection is my friend Michelle Hausman, who's a brilliant director. He decided to start a theater company down there called Miami New Drama. Mm-hmm. And so I worked with him on it, and we co-founded it together. And now the company's up and running and doing really, really well. And so periodically, I workshop some of my work down there. I do some performances there. So the city of Miami gave us this beautiful, beautiful theater, this Art Deco theater in the middle of South Beach. And it's just really, really exciting.
I'm from Port Lauderdale, so I spent a lot of time in the Art Deco facades and decor of, you know, Lincoln Road and things like that. It really is such a beautiful space. And, you know, I love to talk about theater that isn't just happening in Florida, I mean, in New York or Los Angeles or even DC, but South Florida has such a rich theater scene of a mixture of equity and non-equity houses that recent college grads can easily build a resume by going to a city like that before moving to a city like New York or LA. I don't know if you agree with that.
I agree completely. There's really, really interesting things happening down there. And the caliber of the work that I've seen in Miami New Drama has been really amazing. And they have the Arts Center, which also is really good. There's a lot of venues and a lot of really interesting work happening.
So you're on Dear Multi-Hyphenate. And to me, a multi-hyphenate is an artist who has multiple proficiencies which cross-pollinate to help flourish professional capabilities. And that is a long way to say I do a lot of shit. So I want to know, I was so excited to have the opportunity to talk to you because you are a multi-hyphenate. You are a cultivator. You're a director. So how would you identify as a multi-hyphenate? What are your proficiencies? What are your hyphens?
Well, I usually describe myself as a playwright director. I've also been the artistic director of Tectonic Theater Project since its inception. I don't know. I think that there are so many divisions of labor in our field, right? I like to think of myself as a theater maker.
I love that. And where do you think the disconnect comes? Because I think so many young artists today that come out of programs, they are told they have to be one thing. Where do you think that comes from when there are people like you and Mel Brooks and Issa Rae and Rachel Brosnahan and Lin-Manuel Miranda? There are people that build their careers off of doing more than one thing, being those theater makers. Where do you think that fear comes from?
I think it has to do with the fact that we live in a capitalist society. And the way capitalism works is that it tries to hire people for the least amount of time possible. So if you have to hire somebody for a very little amount of time, they need to have spent their whole life getting good at that one thing so that you can hire them for a very specific amount of time. And I think that's why it is. You know, if you look at the way theater is made in America, right, you have 3 weeks of rehearsal, which are in the rehearsal room, right, which is of all the things that happen, the least expensive. Then you have a week of tech in which you bring in the specialists, right, lighting designers, scenic designers, sound designers, right, and they're in for the least amount of time, right, and then you perform the play. So I think that it has something to do with the way in which we make work and in the way in which we live. And, you know, the cheapest thing in that model is the playwright alone in a room writing a play, right? Because that's only one person. That's why I think so much of what's happening in American theater right now has to do with devising, right? Because people are really interested in seeing what happens when plays can be developed in the rehearsal room with several artists involved trying to craft a narrative together.
It's so funny that, you know, you say that you're talking about like you have to be craft. Actually, what's so funny is if we opened ourselves up to multi-hyphenating, I think that is more conservative in terms of money spending, because you are hiring a writer, producer, and sort of, I don't want to say killing two birds with one stone, but it is a little more economic friendly for the producers to sort of invest more in multi-hyphenates and allow multi-hyphenates to take the stage, for lack of better words, to take the stage, because we are saving a little, I think, saving resources and time and not possibly having things lost in translation, egos. While I do believe that there should be big teams and big collaborative efforts, I just think that we should be spending more time investing in the multi-hyphenate, because some of the best work has come out of multi-hyphenate efforts, like, I want to say, Laramie Project and Tectonic Theater. So how, as a multi-hyphenate, like, what are, there are a lot of artists that are starting and want to theater creation and want to create their own theater company and start their own stuff. So what would you say to someone, like, thinking back in founding Tectonic Theater, what would you say to artists that are interested in that? What are the first steps that you would have to take in order to do something like that?
I think the first thing is to find the other artists with whom you share kinship. I mean, aesthetic kinship, ideological kinship, intellectual kinship, that you're interested in similar ideas, in similar discourses. I think that's the very, very first step, because then that begins to create the kind of plays that you're gonna want to create, right? So that's the first step. Find people whose aesthetics you share and start dreaming with them, right? There should be people who not only share your aesthetic, you know, ideas and curiosities, but also people that you feel like you can work with, right? And then start thinking about what are the projects that you want to make, right? You know, the first plays that we did with Tectonic Theater Project were done in, you know, basements, or, you know, we would go to a church and we would say, we'll clean the church for a week if you give us some rehearsal space, or, you know. So there was all this kind of things that you know, find a space, find an abandoned storefront and do a play there, right? And at first you got to invite your friends and your friends' friends. And, you know, when we created Tectonic, there were many times in the first 3 to 4 years of the company where there were more people on stage than in the seats, you know, in the audience seats. But I think that once you find that community, and once you refine your idea of what you want to see on stage and why what you want to see on stage matters, then the rest kind of begins to fall in place.
That's beautiful. I love, you know, I talk about the why often, and I talk about once you know why you're doing something, everything falls into place. What, like, you, I think in this moment when there's so much, attention being needed to decentered people and communities, what I noticed, it's so interesting and it sticks out like a sore thumb, like on social media, right? Like during COVID, during like the pandemic, there was, people were doing virtual shows, which was awesome and wonderful, but in every day, something was happening. A new senseless murder was happened. And something else was happening with COVID or Trump. And then there was on social media, someone in the middle of that being like, come buy tickets to my virtual show. And I feel while that is well-intentioned, if people sort of pay attention more to their why, it fits better in the social responsibility of what we're trying to do as artists, and it sort of fits better in the environment in which we're sort of producing. And I feel like the why never ends. It starts when you're starting a theater company, and it changes throughout. Why are you doing a certain show? Why are you hiring these actors? Why are you working with these people? But I think also something that people aren't, they're maybe scared of doing, is raising money. So how did, or funding their shows. So how did Tectonic, how did Laramie Project, how did money come into play when there needed to be a raise? Like what were sort of the first things that you guys did?
Well, I think that the first thing you do is that you rely on your friends and your community, right? So you do, you know, bake sales, or you do things like that. You ask for contributions and you start, you know, building a donor base, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we very early on institutionalized as a 501c3, meaning a not-for-profit. And so that allows you to begin to ask for grants from the government, from specific institutions, from foundations. And so what we did early on is we hired a part-time grant writer. And so what that would mean is that we would just hire them to write one grant or two grants or three grants or to advise us like that. And you know, that's the most difficult thing to learn. The more plays you create, the more people come see it, the more people won't become donors, the more people become supporters of the company. So it becomes, you know, and it takes a while. For us, I think the first 5 years were the most difficult one. On the fifth year of the life of Tectonic, I wrote Gross Indecency, The Three Trials of Oscar Wilde. Mm-hmm. And that play became a hit. It did very, very, very well. It ran in New York for 2 years, and it became one of the most performed plays in America. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we went from being this kind of darling of the off-Broadway scene to being, you know, a nationally recognized theater company. And so that made things easier. But I think that what I would say to a young starting theater company is visibility equals donors. You know, the more work you do, the more you're out there, the more people come to see the shows, the more you continue to maintain your lists of who's coming to see the work and who's, the more easy fundraising becomes.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you for that. I think money scares people, and I think people don't really know the first place to start when it comes to money, but kind of akin to what we're saying earlier, it's as long as you know why you're doing what you're doing and just getting it out there, cleaning churches for free space, doing storefront theater, doing site-specific theater, and getting people to come. You know, I was just watching the Spring Awakening documentary, right? And you know, that was a show that no one believed in. And then here comes Atlantic Theater Company that was like, you know what? I want to give it a chance. All it takes is one person. All it takes is one person, one perspective, one point of view that matches your point of view. And you're on a journey to Broadway, which is so exciting and so wonderful. And the magic about our industry, I think.
I think that you have to trust that the work will speak for itself, mm-hmm. right? And that the work is the thing that brings all of your needed partners on board.
That's amazing. So I want to know from a director's point of view, I think so many multi-hyphenates are scared of sharing that they're multi-hyphenates because I think many of my clients in my photo studio have made up narratives saying, oh, this casting director thinks I'm not an actor anymore because I've started producing or I've started writing my own stuff, or this, you know, person doesn't think that I'm auditioning anymore just because I've been focusing on the play that I want to produce. I mean, in my own instance, you know, when I started photography, I was still auditioning, but I had someone come up to me at an event and look me up and down and go, you're doing this now. And so I understand it's hard for people to sort of wrap their brain around an artist being able to have multiple proficiencies, but how for you, a director, how does a multi-hyphenate help you in the room? I'm asking more of like from the perspective of like someone that you hired to be an actor, but I would love to hear other points of views. And
well, look, I'll tell you personally, I started as an actor, mm-hmm. And then I decided that I wanted to create the whole stage event, that working only on my character wasn't satisfying to me personally. So I wanted to create the whole stage event and I started directing. And then I realized that if I was really serious about creating the stage event, I had to deal with the issue of text. And so that's why I decided to become a playwright. But I think when I'm in the rehearsal room, the hyphenate helps because, you know, when I'm working with a playwright like Rajiv Joseph or Doug Wright, right? I've written plays. I know, what the task is and how to hopefully inspire and motivate and help a dramaturg, you know, a play that's being written. So I think that those are some of the advantages of it. When I write and direct my own plays, I always say that there's always an eternal fight between the director and the playwright as to who's right. and in terms of the question you ask about actors is very difficult to answer because I'm not an actor. I haven't had that experience, but I can imagine people, even in our industry, which is a very creative industry, people want to peg you down to something, right? They want to be able to label you something and then, you know, and so it doesn't surprise me that somebody who's an actor who has started producing will get that response because people cannot deal with either ambiguity or intersectionality, right? Mm-hmm. Oh yes, you're Latino, but you're also gay and you're also Jewish. And you know, those places, those intersectionalities are things that people always have a hard time dealing with. But I think that, you know, and it happens in a myriad of ways, right? You direct something like the Laramie Project. Almost as Coppin is the director of political drama. So I direct Torchstone Trilogy. Oh, Moises Kopman can do comedy. You know, it's like people need these boxes in which to place you. And but I think that it happens in every aspect of our field, right? Like I just directed my first musical on Broadway. And people are like, Moises Kopman directed a musical? Like, you know, it's like, if you're a director and you're a good director, hopefully you can do many things, right?
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. And you basically answered the question that I asked. I wanted to know like how the multi-hyphenate helps the director, you being the director. How do they come into a room and sort of help solve problems? And because I want to make sure that artists get out of their heads and being like, oh, I can't be more than one thing. But I think you just spoke to that in saying like, it helps with communication. It helps you broaden the things that you're able to do. It helps you in so many different ways that we all should be multi-hyphenates if we allow ourselves to be. There are people that don't want to be multi-hyphenates and that is fine. It's art. You're allowed to take whatever route that you are, but it opens us up to different creations, legendary creations like the Laramie Project, which I did in high school. And It's one of my favorite plays, and it's so touching and it's so educational. And, you know, I have to thank the multi-hyphenate approach for a creation such as the Laramie Project, because that was your role in it. You were a multi-hyphenate in that experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So, speaking of, that was a good segue because you mentioned a new musical on Broadway. You directed Paradise Square on Broadway. So, I mean, I loved it. And what I was telling you before was I got to see a sneak peek because I was asked to photograph rehearsals, and I was able to, which was such an honor, and it was so amazing to do so. I think it was the day of your first full run through.
It was great having you there.
I loved it. And I loved the stage pictures that were created. I loved the ways in which you were telling the story, and then I got to see it in its full element with that, you know, because in the rehearsal room there were scenes happening upstage, but they were really on a platform. So I got to see even more magic happening, the intimacy that was created with those characters and those special moments. And I just want to know, like, what has your process been like? Has there been use of the multi-hyphenate in your process as a director for a big smash Broadway musical? I just want to hear from you on that because I really loved the show.
Well, again, I think, you know, for me, I try to think of myself as a theater maker and a storyteller, right? So both as a director and as a playwright, I am very, very interested in how we tell stories. I'm very, very interested in dramatic structure. I'm very interested in how do you construct narratives that allow you to deal with difficult ideas in very human ways, mm-hmm. right? So in my work personally, I'm always interested in that space that occurs between the personal and the political. I'm very interested in looking at historical moments through the eyes of the people who were on the margins of society, mm-hmm. Of the eyes of the other, mm-hmm. right? What happens if you look at the story of Matthew Shepard through the eyes of the people of that town, right? What happens if you look at the story of Victorian England through the eyes of Oscar Wilde? What happens if you look at the life of Germany during the Second World War through the eyes of a trans character, right? And so that's something that has always fascinated me. And so for me, Paradise Square was the opportunity to create a play about the Civil War in America, or about the period of the Civil War in America, as seen through the eyes of the greatest outcast of that culture, right? People who lived in a slum, people were of a very low economic means, people who were, you know, Irish immigrants or free people or of color. What happens when you look at America through those eyes, and what can you learn? So to me, those are the kind of things that kind of get me up in the morning and get me excited to be in a rehearsal room. You know, the hyphenate ability for me, being a playwright, I was really excited to be working with, you know, three, you know, like a lyricist, a composer, and a book writer. Because if you think about it, each one of those practices, we're all trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to tell a coherent story. But there's a way in which music speaks. Music tells a story. There's a way in which lyrics speak. Lyrics tell the story. There's a way in which text and scenes speak. So this idea of using my dramaturgical intelligence to try and put together a coherent narrative that carries through was something very exciting to me.
That's so exciting. And you could feel that excitement because I thought it was so innovative in so many different ways. And the story I thought was so important because I feel that way about Jews. There are so many more stories to tell than the Holocaust the pogroms in Russia. There's so many other stories. And I feel like Paradise Square taps into that. Like Joaquina's role is so learning about her and what she stands for was so incredible. And also she's incredibly talented and she's just amazing. And I just loved the stories that were told on that stage at the Barrymore. I just think, you know, it's a very successful musical.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Since it was your first musical on Broadway, and you were having people saying Moises Kaufman can direct a musical on Broadway. What were the things that surprised you about yourself directing a musical on Broadway? Because it's never too late, no matter how many Tonys we've won or have been nominated for or how far our career spans, it's never too late to surprise ourselves and learn something about ourselves. So is there anything that you learned about yourself in this process?
I think the most exciting thing about doing Paradise Square was really to be fully present to the power of music to convey narrative. I think that was the most exciting part. The text does, you know, carries part of the way, the lyrics carry part of the way, but just, you know, Jason Howland is such a brilliant, brilliant composer. And you can see how he is weaving narratives into the melodies and into the musical vocabulary of the show. So that was, I think, one of the most exciting things.
And from an audience perspective, you know, you say the book lyrics is so important and those proficiencies are so important in telling the story. But I think the choreography was also another added layer that I've seen propel the plot.
Very much so.
In a way that I have not seen done as successfully or in a very long time. And I think that is such an incredible thing about Paradise Square is that you all used the choreography to further the plot of the story.
Very much so. I was very, very interested in that. And it was very important for me that every time that people started moving, that it had something to do with moving forward, not only the narrative through line, but the emotional through line of the show. And I think that in that sense, we were really blessed. You know, we had some great people working with us. We had Chloe Davis, who's a brilliant, brilliant choreographer. We had Bill T. Jones, of course. We had Alex Sanchez. We had Jalan Lambert. So we had the choreographic team for this show was astonishing.
I think it's an astonishing team and astonishing cast. And I hope you have a very long
amen
life at the Barrymore Theater. We're going to do a ticket giveaway.
Oh, great.
The rule is simple for those of you that have listened to this episode so far. What I need you to do is write a review on Apple Podcasts for Dear Multi-Hyphenate, and you are going to mention that you love this episode as well as Dear Multi-Hyphenate. And then I'm going to take all those names and I'm going to do a little drawing in the next week or so. And then I'm going to announce on air and social media who won the ticket giveaway for Paradise Square. And I need to see it again. I saw it. I actually saw it it was just about to open in previews, and it was the first night that Kennedy went on for Chelina.
No. Oh, wow. I remember that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Was that her? Did I get the correct name?
You got it perfect.
Yes. It was her first performance.
And she was wonderful, wasn't she?
She was so wonderful. And it was very cool. It was very cool to be, I think that's been an exciting thing about, I don't know if this is selfish or not, but that has been an exciting thing about theater in the in COVID is there are so many people that are getting a chance to go on for huge roles. It's like, who's our next Shirley MacLaine? You know what I mean? Like, is there going to be...
Well, we just heard that, right? We heard that there's somebody in Funny Girl that is, doing an incredible job being an understudy, right? What's her name? Do you know?
Julie Benko.
Julie Benko. Everyone's talking about Julie Benko.
Yes. And I'm excited to see both. I think actually having a really strong understudy and standby is really great marketing because it makes you want to see the show twice. It makes you, especially if you see that understudy first, you go, wow, you were amazing. And I'm so happy that I was on the ride with you. I want to see it again. Also with, you know, the person that you were understudying. I think having a strong support system in that way is built in publicity.
It's true. I think that's really true. Yeah.
And that's a testament to a wonderful creative team. And that was another thing, was walking into that rehearsal room and feeling the warmth, like you all wanted to be there and you all were having a wonderful time. And that is a testament to you being a leader of that room. And I just loved experiencing that.
Oh, so thank you. Thank you so much, Michael.
Of course. So thank you so much, Moises, for coming under Multi-Hyphenate. What's the best way to follow you? Are you on social media? Like, what is?
I'm on Instagram under my name. I'm on Facebook, so yeah, you can just follow me.
I'm gonna add you right now. I'm not on Twitter, but I am very present on Instagram, and I can't wait for our paths to cross again. And do you have anything you want to say to younger artists right now that you haven't said already that are starting their careers that you think they need to hear?
Dream big and go forward bluntly.
I love that so much. Thank you, Moises.
Okay. Bye-bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.